Shaiish, the realm of death. The somber and overcast underworlds of Shaiish labor under the tyranny of Nagash. The realm of endings came into being as a multitude of places of eternal rest and solace, shaped by the beliefs of mortals. Yet, since then, they have been conquered twice over and remade into places more fitting of a nightmare. Once, long ago, Shaiish obeyed a simple truth. If a mortal populace believed in an afterlife, it would crystallize and form at the edge of the realm of death. And upon their deaths, their souls would find themselves there. Whether they believed they were bound for a paradise, a purgatory, or even an eternity of dark oblivion, that is what they would find waiting for them on the other side. During the age of myth, that began to change, and not, as with the other realms, because of these slow, insidious whispers of chaos. When Sigmar first came to Shaiish, he saw boundless potential in its ordered sanctity and quiet, reflective fields. Over the course of the Age of Myth, he settled hundreds of underworlds with his people, where the living coexisted peacefully with the dead. In particular, across the region known as the Prime Innerlands. There, great cities and monuments were built, and civilization thrived amongst the mausoleums and graveyards that commemorated countless generations of the dead. The waters of the realm thrived with pale-skinned forms of life. Amongst them, the massive eaterfish and greater scuttlefish that were sold as delicacies where one underworld traded with another. Dirge song, soulful music, and amethyst sky lanterns drifted through the night, and trade with the other realms flourished. Where danger threatened, the specters of the settlers' ancestors would fight alongside them. In times of peace, they would teach them secrets and crafts long lost, and even while away, idle hours with them in games of strategy and chance. It was a utopia of a sort, albeit a morbid one. And in a few remote places, that same lifestyle is said to still exist. The vast majority of Shaiish's underworlds, however, have been remade into places of grim, obedient undeath, for Nagash has broken and consumed the rulers of each underworld one by one. Where fine towers and citadels once dominated the horizon, now the bone-made spires of his so-called necrotopia claw at the skies. Every day, his legions march out, killing those who would resist his rule, or else tithing them for offerings of bone with which to build ever more necromantic constructs and fortifications. Over the Age of Chaos, the great necromancer was forced to abandon his works by a concentrated invasion from the ruinous powers. Retreating to Styx and fighting a rearguard action to preserve his empire as best he could. But, as with Alariel, the breaking of Sigmar's tempest has brought him a reprieve. The masterstroke of the Necroquake turned the tide, and for a time, Nagash was in the ascendant once more. He drove chaos back on 100 fronts, even as he sent his agents out to stake his claims in other realms. For Nagash desires nothing less than to make all of creation part of his undying empire. Underworlds at war. The Prime Innerlands are at the forefront of the battle for Shaiish. Located close to the all-devouring mouth of the Shaiish Nadir. They slip closer and closer to oblivion with each day. Yet, the mortals who dwell here have not given up hope yet, and will battle the forces of undeath with every fiber of their being. The Shaiish Nadir consolidated Nagash's iron grip upon the realm of death. From Nagash-Zar to the furthest reaches of the Ossiarch Empire, the living are hunted down and slain, or else forced to submit body and soul to the inevitability of oblivion. Yet, the great necromancer still cannot claim total control over the underworlds, for its mortal populace has not yet given in to despair. While a flicker of optimism remains, there is hope for the lands of death. The Prime Innerlands are a swath of continental underworlds caught between the relentless draw of the Shaiish Nadir and the fortified resolve of the God King. Many of the Edgeward lands furthest from the Nadir are temperate and habitable, and home to several important free cities. Yet those nearer to the core are thoroughly doused in amethyst magic, so barren and moribund that few but the dead can thrive there. Many of these perished lands have been fortified by Nagash's legions, turned into bastions from which fresh invasions can be launched upon the living. As befitting a realm formed from the collective beliefs of mortal kind, the Innerlands are drastically variable in appearance and climate. Stygix is a wind-blown region of soaring mountains and gloomy woodland, while the deserts of Penultima are arid and strewn with flecks of bone. Few dare speak of the cannibal continent of Charnelcourt, a land of rotting flesh and sinew, almost entirely overrun by the mordants of the flesh-eater courts. Despite the manifold dangers, Sigmar's people have established settlements on several of these landmasses. Prominent amongst these are the city of Lethys in Stygix, solemn Glimsforge, and the forbidding castle complex of Thanator's Manse, a rising power that seeks to restore the glory of the Amethyst Princedoms, an empire destroyed during the Age of Chaos. In each of these underworlds, the living exist alongside the dead. In some cases, This strange relationship is a benevolent one. In the valleys of Halost, the souls of warriors slain in battle rise again each day to fight anew. And mortal heroes of flesh and blood battle monsters and fiends alongside their long-dead ancestors. By contrast, the tombs of Lyria must be sealed and surrounded by trickling streams of star water to prevent tormented geists rising up to prey upon their own kin. Perhaps most terrible of all, in Neferadia and Carstinia, mortals are little more than shambling cattle, livestock to be butchered and bled for their vampire overlords. To thrive in the Innerlands, societies must learn to observe the most ancient and arcane traditions. Gravewort and silver shavings might repel a rotting cadaver scratching upon your windowpane, while bullets dipped in the ashes of saints seem to strike at ethereal beings with a particular potency. There is a bustling trade between mortal settlements, with gem merchants from Thanator's Manse trading warding crystals and enchanted rings for unguent oils from Glimsforge and amnesia-inducing Lethisian lake water. Though the practice is forbidden by decree of the God King, some settlements even accede to the bone tithes demanded by the Ossiarch Bone Reapers, hoping that the sacrifice of a few unfortunates might prolong the lives of others. Stygix is a land suffused with historical importance. The legends say it was here that the great necromancer fled after his defeat by Archaon in the early years of the Age of Chaos. The tales tell that he descended into the lightless depths of Lake Lethys, at the bottom of which lies an enormous coffin of grave sand and amethyst crystal. Here, he slowly reconstituted himself over the course of centuries. Whether this tale is true or not, it cannot be denied that the so-called Land of Forgotten Gods has a particularly fell aspect. This stark underworld once acted as a meeting place for many gods of death, who gathered in the titanic castle of Deific Mons to debate the distribution of souls. The cyclopean halls of that fortress now lie silent and cold, for its occupants were long ago defeated and devoured by Nagash, who will suffer no rivals in his quest to dominate Shaiish. The memory of some of these gods still lingers. In Lethys, the free city on the shore of the great lake of the same name, the worship of these forgotten gods is still practiced. Most notably of Morda, master of the Bleak Raven, a funeral deity revered by gravekeepers and mortuary priests. It is said by some that Morda constructed the castle at Deific Mons, and he alone escaped the great necromancer's hunger. Azerite scholars doubt this notion, but it cannot be denied that his worshippers possess the power to still the soul upon death, preventing it from slipping into Nagash's clutches. The principal industry in Stygix is death. This is a land of undertakers, embalmists, and crypt watchers. For the right price, the priests of the Order Posthumus, a powerful organization ruled by worshippers of Morda and based in Lethys, can inter one's corpse in such a way that neither your physical remains or your spirit will ever be taken by necromancy. Many travelers from far distant lands make the hard pilgrimage to Stygix in their final years. So feared is the possibility of eternal torment at the hands of old bones, a common colloquialism for the supreme lord of the undead. In return for blessing and internment, they offer those treasures that are hard to find in this grim underworld. Rich foods, caimonic silver, and gifts of art and music. Sigmar's crusades in the Prime Innerlands are more often than not fought against the armies of death, which rise in terrifying numbers to assail those few strongholds of the living that were not overrun following the Shaiish necroquake. By necessity, they are often reactive in nature, launched to reclaim lands swarmed by shambling deadwalkers, or rendered silent and cold by shrieking processions of night haunt. Yet, the God King is not content to simply hold on to his gains and wager that his people can withstand the predations of Nagash. Sigmar knows that hope alone can keep the Innerlands from sliding into oblivion. In a realm where faith itself takes physical form, an intensity of mortal worship can anchor an entire landmass from the whirlpool pool of the Nadir. Thus, it is more important than ever for Stygixians and Innerlanders to have a cause in which to believe. So it is that crusades reach out to claim new underworlds and cleanse them of Nagash's black taint. Penultima has been settled and wars launched against its Ossiarch defenders and the Grot Gloom tribes that infest its eastern shores. Lethysian shock troops have landed in the Warm Soul uplands, and there found themselves locked in a grinding conflict with the Death Rattle Barrow armies of the Jade Skull Emperor. Even Neferadia finds itself under assault as the Stormcast Eternals liberate blood farms and chattel villages, freeing mortals destined for the feasting tables of Queen Neferata's court. These crusades are often commanded by the grim and austere lords of the Anvils of Heldenhammer, particularly those of the Sacrosanct Chambers. Arcane warriors whose expertise in amethyst magic is legendary. They are determined to avenge the ills wrought by the great necromancer. And few are more accomplished at making war upon necromantic horrors than they. The core of a Shaiishian crusade is comprised of grizzled veteran troops, their skin tattooed and charms draped around their necks and the barrels of their muskets. These are men and women that have spent their entire lives battling geists and night haunters, and are confident that their strength of their faith and observance of ritual will protect them. In the deathly wilderness of the Prime Innerlands, however, that may prove to be a forlorn hope. Lethys. On the shores of a vast black lake resides the city of Lethys, a gothic and forbidding place of soaring spires and leering gargoyles. This is the greatest mortal settlement in the realm of death, and its enchanted walls have rebuffed both demonic and undead armies time and again. Lethys takes its name from the lake by which it is situated, a vast body of glassy, pitch-black water whose depths conceal mysteries beyond the ken of any human. The largest of all the Shaishian free cities, it is a morbid place, raised in worship not solely of the God King, but also the deity known as Morda, Master of the Bleak Raven, a prominent death god thought by many to have been consumed by Nagash, but whose worshippers insist still linger somewhere in the underworlds, watching over his faithful. Vast flocks of Stygixian great ravens call the city home, and appear in much of the city's iconography and heraldry. Indeed, it is a serious crime to kill one of these birds, for their mere presence is believed to ward off spirits and unquiet geists. The saying goes that Lethys is a graveyard with a city attached, and indeed walking through its streets, one might see the truth of this. Gravestones and looming, angel-winged statues line every avenue, and the hammering of nails driven into coffins is a constant refrain. Even the stormkeep of the city's guardians, the anvils of Heldenhammer, is a foreboding edifice of black stone, resembling more an enormous mortuary shrine than a fortress. The stormkeep stands guard over a great swath of sanctified earth, within which are interred the remains of 1,000 and more saints and martyrs of the God King's faith. Called the Grand Mausoleum, this towering citadel of black stone dominates the center of the city and stands guard over the Veil, a realm gate tied to the movements of the celestial spheres. Lethys is a darksome city, but not an ugly one. There is a bleak majesty in its soaring towers and tall, narrow manor houses, whose artfully engraved steeples cast flickering shadows across Lake Lethys. Beneath the lake's still surface lie gloomy depths that no human can or will ever see, for its waters affect the minds of those exposed to them, stealing away memories and emotions. In great quantities, this drought can turn men and women into blank-eyed mutes, making sailing the lake a dangerous prospect at any time. But when diluted and mixed with sacred herbs, it can prove most beneficial. Known as peace water, this concoction soothes fear and eases ailments of the mind and soul. It is exported in great quantity to other free cities, where it is used to grant those scarred by their exposure to the horrors of the realms a measure of tranquility. The source of this magical power remains a mystery. The legends tell that the great necromancer himself maintained a hidden sepulcher at the lake's bottom and retreated there after his defeats during the Age of Chaos. Many scholars and clergymen dispute this, insisting that such contamination would surely have far more terrible effects upon any mortals dwelling nearby. Still, it is a fact that many strange, undead beasts, such as the carrion pike and the much-feared skull-coiler eel, appear to thrive in Lake Lethys, preying upon those fishing fleets that brave the waters. As befitting its superstitious mien, Lethys has become the focal point for a morbid trade like no other. Its workshops produce bewildering numbers of gewgaws, scrimshaws, amulets, abjurational talismans, and bone charms designed to protect the bearer against the predations of unnatural creatures, specifically those that bear the curse of undeath. These goods are traded with other free cities in vast numbers, for the astonishing thing is that they actually work. The raven priests of Morda are privy to many secrets of warding and banishment handed down over generations. The tragedy is that for every genuine Lethysian talisman, there are a dozen imitations sold by shysters and conmen across the mortal realms, often with fatal consequences for the buyer. Aside from the lightning engines and star water mills that grant light and energy to the noble quarters, Lethys's main source of power comes from the everwheels beneath the city. These immense, churning treadmills are connected to important elements of the city's infrastructure. Water wheels, furnaces, and grain shredding blades, and are driven by the motion of thousands upon thousands of mortals packed together in a great trudging mass. It is overwhelmingly criminals and prisoners of war that find themselves condemned to experience this man-made hell, but not exclusively so. In exchange for assurance that upon death their bodies will be interred and blessed by the raven priests, many of Lethys's citizens willingly subject themselves to a long spell upon the everwheels. So feared is the great enemy Nagash that a few years of terrible exhaustion and suffering is considered a far better fate than an eternity of tortured servitude at the great necromancer's hands. Lethys experienced its darkest hour during the latter phases of the Soul Wars, when an enemy of Nighthaunt, led by Lady Oleander, swept down upon the city along with a shambling horde of the risen dead. Their aim was to breach the Midnight Tomb, a storm vault that had long lain hidden beneath the city's mausoleum grounds, and was guarded by the anvils of the Heldenhammer. In that eldritch prison lurked something yet more terrible. An ancient servant of Nagash, locked away for centuries at the behest of the God King. Despite the valiant efforts of the Stormcast Eternals, the tomb was torn open, and the entity known as Orphion Katakros unleashed upon the realms. Though the city endured, the Anvil's bitter defeat left a mark of shame upon their souls, one that they would take desperate measures to alleviate in the years to come. Olgu, the Realm of Shadow. Veils and illusions, treachery and deception, these things typify Olgu, just as much as the darkness and shadow for which it is named. Here, to trust the senses is to stumble into misfortune, despair, and death. Only the sly survive in the 13 Dominions, and its rulers, Malarion and Morathi, are the most cunning of all. The domains of Olgu have neither night nor day, but range from gloom to pitch black, depending on the strange tides and shifting regions of that place. The land itself, they say, deliberately leads the foolish over cliffs and into sucking tar pits, whilst the cruel seas will pull those who brave it into the endless whirlpools or dash them on hidden rocks. This is the domain of secrets and lies, and it can swallow an invading army just as easily as the morning mist hides the rising sun, leaving nothing behind but screams. Comprised of curling, mist-wreathed landmasses known as the 13 Dominions, all the shrouded countries of Olgu are saturated with illusion and lurking menace. Here, the creak of trees and chill wind sounds as the mocking of crones, the gossamer of spider silk can throttle and garrote, and the vast chains that bind so many of Olglu's metaliths to its greater landmasses can look solid as iron, but flow like ink at the touch. Long ago, the lands were synonymous with refuge, philosophical introspection, and the bliss of lucid dreams. Some optimists believe there are still places like that to be found. But if there are, none can point to them. It was Olgu to which Malarion came after the demise of the world that was. There he raged, for he had found not a form to call his own, though staggeringly powerful by the standards of the sane. He was as insubstantial as shade. Over time, his anger and bitterness coalesced, giving him solidity. He searched long for his elven kin, with which to form his dominion. For he had already resolved to bring the lands of Olgu under his heel. So staggeringly arrogant was he. As Malarion roamed, he discovered many strange creatures abroad in Olgu. Yet he felt no true kinship with any of them. Eventually, his path crossed that of his mother, Morathi. He found her surrounded by shadow demons in a dark glade, all engaging in a wild bacchanal that he would later learn sealed an alliance between Morathi and the rulers of the Black Moon known as the Orb Duplicita. Together, they claimed the Shadrach Convergence as their power base. Though the domineering Malarion took almost all of it for his own. With these two great minds to guide them, the mortal cultures of Olgu thrived. During the Age of Chaos, Olgu was torn by the war between elf and chaos worshipper known as the Cathartar Duel. The Skaven, especially those of clans Eshin, sent their agents and assassins to every corner of the realm on fell missions that only the Master Clan claimed to understand, and they infest its reaches even now. Yet even with all their artifice, they too have failed to truly tame Olgu's wilds. Only Malarion himself and his endless legions of cruel-hearted elves can make that claim. Where the Lumineth exist in a symbiotic relationship with Hish, the elves of Olgu dominate their spiritual homelands with dark magic. They are more than ready to turn it upon their foes. Blades in the Dark. Olgu is a paradise for ambushers and those who prefer to bleed their foes dry before ever meeting them in open battle. Perhaps nowhere in the realm has seen such vicious fighting as the Shadrach Convergence, a twisting eddy of continental shelves and inland seas where 8 of Olgu's 13 domains meet. The Shadrach Convergence is one of the most important regions of Olgu. Here, many of the 13 dominions come to a point, forming natural nodes of trade and politics. That is not to say that the lands here are any less harsh and deadly than elsewhere in the realm of shadows. The seas of Shadrach are swathed in fog, near impossible to navigate without magical means, and home to many malicious entities that delight in preying upon luckless sailors and anyone else who dares to brave the ever-twisting wilds. At the center of the convergence lies the Umbral Veil, one of the most heavily shrouded and gloomiest regions of Olgu. Here, at the heart of the Heliflux Isles, stands Hagnar, the great temple city of the Canaanite cult and domain of the shadow goddess Morathi. Her deadly flock, the matriarchal warrior elves known as the Daughters of Cain, have dominated the convergence for centuries, eviscerating anyone who dared question the primacy of the Cainite cult. In lightning raids, and cruel ambushes. They have slaughtered chaos worshippers by the thousand, and hauled many more away to be sacrificed in gruesome rituals. Hagnar's position at the center of the Umbral Vale makes it the most important location in the region, and the temple city has grown over the centuries from a humble shrine to an enormous militarized center of worship, with its own trading harbor and a mercenary armada of Scourge Reaver ships. Though initially given to Marathi as an intentional insult, the archipelago of the Heliflux Isles has become a major power in its own right, able to rival even mighty Ol'Gurath, domain of Malarian, for influence. This impressive rise in prominence has been achieved with subterfuge and politicking, and also through the savvy building of alliances. In particular, Marathi has forged close ties with the nearby port of Misthaven, a settlement of the God King that rests on the innermost tip of Clan Rundu. Dominating the sea lanes of Inner Shadrach, Misthaven's fleets and armies work in concert with those of Hagnar to control trade both within the Shagrad Convergence and along those routes that enter from distant realms. Aside from the hordes of chaos that still haunt the Ol'Gwyn wilds, the Vale's main threat comes from Ol'Gurath. That continent, largest of the Dominions by far, looms over the Convergence on its easterly flank, its immensity dwarfing the Heliflux Isles and defended ferociously by Malarion's vast legions. To the west, the Cainite cult has expanded deep into the dominions of Fuartorn, Vaaleth, and Clarundu, raising temples and gladiatorial arenas the size of cities. Large swaths of the Convergence remain in the hands of Slaanesh worshippers, Grots and Skaven, and to venture into such territories is to invite a slow and agonizing death. Even in this land, hostile to its bones, worshippers of the God King have carved out an existence. They have learned the same harsh lessons taught to any who dare to dwell within the realm of shadow, and adapted as only humans can to its unique challenges. The Shadrach Convergence seems created solely to terrify those forced to do battle within its bounds. Misty valleys wind on endlessly, obeying no laws save their own maddening unpredictability. Chains of darkness hang in the firmament, their true immensity shrouded by the ever-present fog. Whoever fashioned these foreboding devices is a mystery. But where they meet the earth, they lock the ever-shifting isles of Shadrach in place. Elsewhere, wiry trees seem to take on the shape of slender, thresher-clawed horrors, and rare glimpses of shelter are revealed to be nothing more than cruel illusions. The great crusades of order are not lightly dispatched into such terrain, for the Convergence swallows up armies without a trace, and always yearns for more. knowledge of the land and of the mercurial weather of Olgu is essential for any military venture. And so Misthaven and other settlements rely greatly upon Scourge privateers and the warriors of the Order Serpentis, both of whom are at home in the mist-shrouded forests of Shadrach. Living in Olgu demands an adaptable outlook, and those peoples who prefer to lay down firm roots find such a life difficult to bear. Misthaven and other Olguan settlements have only small populations of Duardan, and fewer still of orders such as the Phoenix Temple, who have great trouble keeping the flames of their shrines alight. Far more common are the insular Darkling Covens and the Assassins of the Shadowblades, who thrive in the impermanent climate. Perhaps influenced by the elven way of war, Olguan crusades tend to be smaller, yet directed with precision. They are outfitted to wage an asymmetrical campaign, relying on movement and aggression to cut the enemy supply lines and harry their flanks, only laying the foundation of encampments when their foes are dead or in flight. For the God King's folk in Olgu, the greatest and yet least trusted ally of all is Hagnar and the Daughters of Cain. Tales of Morathi's duplicity and cruelty are well known. Few of Sigmar's folk have not heard of the annexation of Anvilgard. But those humans who dwell within Olgu possess by necessity a changeable moral compass. Witch elves and even terrifying Skaithborn fight alongside humans when the needs arise, together butchering chaos worshippers wherever they are found. This is only ever a tentative alliance. Both are all too aware that there will come a time when the conflict between Morathi and Sigmar is ignited once again, and tenuous bonds of comradeship abandoned. Misthaven. There is no more infamous den of skullduggery than the seaborne city of Misthaven. This notorious shadow port is home to scoundrels and rogues of all descriptions, and defends itself against the horrors of the wild realms, not with high walls and fortifications, but through trickery and illusion. If an unlearned traveler were to lay their eyes upon Misthaven from afar, they would likely assume it to be nothing more than a free city rooted upon the shores of the Penumbral Sea. Perhaps not so very different from other great ports such as Anvilgard or Excelsis. Like so much in the realm of shadows, this is a deception. Misthaven is constructed not upon firm foundations of stone, but upon the decks of multitude of seaborne vessels, lashed together to form a floating citadel. Manor houses in Misthaven are not mansions of stone and marble, but many-decked galleons and wide-hulled barks, bedecked with guns and fabulously embroidered sails. Its streets are creaking wharfs bisected by shadowy canals of pitch-black water. And its populace go about their lives underneath the pall of an Olguin sky. Well used to the gentle rolling of the ground beneath their feet and the constant inky darkness about them. The districts of the city are in fact distinct armadas under the rule of free guild captains and fleet masters of the Scourge privateers, and are capable of breaking their moorings and splitting apart if threatened. Much like a shoal of glimmerfish scatters in the face of an onrushing gyre shark, these individual vessels will race for clear water, ensuring that even if some are captured, the greater entity that is Misthaven will endure. The folk of the City of Scoundrels have nothing but scorn for high walls and watchtowers. Their way of life demands a less impractically rigid solution to the manifold and ever unpredictable dangers of the realm seas. When the immediate threat has passed, the individual vessels find their way backed together by the light of the Scryer's Ark, the great bark keep of the Celestial Warbringers. A floating fortress of sleek and ornate design, Scryer's Ark is illuminated by the light of Shadrach's Gleam, a great floating realm gate that hangs suspended above the Stormkeep's main deck. It appears that the Celestial Warbringers have leashed this portal to their will, but in fact they merely intuit its movements through divination and ritual, and follow its drifting path wherever it leads. They have, however, managed to achieve an arcane method of alternately dimming and focusing the gleam's wan light, shutting it off to shroud enemies in darkness, or sending beams of luminescence across the ocean to call distant ships home. For over a century, Shadrach's Gleam has stayed in place over the coast of the Cape of Tenebrax. And so it is there that Misthaven resides. Fortunately, for the unscrupulous types who make up the city's grand conclave, this region is rife for exploitation and profit. Nearby is the dangerous yet economically powerful temple city of Hagnar, stronghold of the Daughters of Cain. Though tensions between Morathi and the God King are delicate after the goddess's annexation of Anvilgard, there exists a tenuous peace and fine prospects for trade. Corsairs out of Misthaven offer not only shadow-woven silks and illusory charms, but also captured prisoners fated for sacrifice at the hands of the Cainite cult. One of the most lucrative trades in Misthaven is that of narcotics and illicit substances. The market of mists draws wanderers, peddlers, and black marketeers from across the realms, and its scourge overseers hunt strange and deadly beasts of the Shadow Sea that possess innate magical abilities. The hideous abyssal glatch, the frenzied sawfang, and untold other abominations. The corpses of such beasts are processed and their innards alchemized, broken down, and transformed into magical powders, tinctures, oils, and salves. Upon ingestion, these substances temporarily grant unnatural and often bizarre powers, such as the ability to levitate, to channel bursts of predatory aggression, or even to supercharge one's magical potential in an explosion of arcane force. Naturally, such benefits do not come without cost. Rumors tell that the foggy canals of Misthaven are filled with slick-skinned once-humans that imbibed too much oil of Glatch and were transformed into something terrible and endlessly hungry. It is for such reasons that the folk of Misthaven rely upon helmsmen of the powerful and mysterious Seapath Guild to guide them safely through the forests of masts and hulls that pass for Misthaven's streets. This secretive company jealously hoards the knowledge required to navigate the city's waterways and the eddying currents surrounding them. Each blind and cowled helmsman demands unique payment for his or her services, which can range from tangible treasures, such as trinkets and gewgaws, to vials of blood or offered secrets. More mysterious still are the Lantern Men, those solid hooded figures who warn the populace of imminent danger by tolling their sonorous harbor bells when the mists roll in and the terrors concealed within them. Misthaven's underground trade in narcotics is utterly illegal, of course, but since it contributes to the city's thriving economy, the morally flexible conclave is more than happy to turn a blind eye. The celestial warbringers, too, appear content to allow an element of criminality to go unpunished. They step in to seize and destroy particularly unpalatable shipments only when their auguries judge it necessary. Misthaven can call upon a large army of Free Guild soldiers, many of whom are press-ganged into service at need. These warriors are trained to specialize in shipboard combat and coastal raiding, but are equally comfortable embarking upon extended campaigns on land. Resources such as wood, stone, and metal are always required, after all, and plundering remains of long-standing cultural tradition. On land and at sea, Misthaven's generals employ the auguries delivered unto them by the Stormcast Eternals to outmaneuver and outwit their foes, supplementing this advanced warning with all the trickery prized by the natives of Olgu. In a realm of illusion, one's eyes can barely be trusted, and in many ways, the blind man sees truest of all. Rather than relying upon vision alone to locate their targets, Misthaven sharpshooters hone other senses, hearing, scent, and other less easily defined instincts that all Olgu-born mortals must develop in order to separate deception from truth. These skills are honed at a young age, Misthaven youths feed their families by hunting gloom shrikes and other seabirds amidst the city's ever-present blanket of fog. Squeezing their eyes shut and allowing intuition to guide their arrows. Thus, the city's marksmen are accustomed to levels of darkness that would render most other missile troops practically useless. Though, conversely, they have been observed to struggle when exposed to bright light, which seems to dull their unique abilities.